Welcome back to the Gridiron Pulse,
Riverside,
episode 4. We are here right now, Jacob, and I can't even get through the full intro without talking about what we just saw unfold at Augusta at the Masters. We are primarily a football show, and we know that, but this Masters Sunday that we just saw transcends like all sports to me. I mean, I'm just ready to get right into that because we would be giving the people a disservice if we didn't talk about what just happened there. Rory Mac, oh, my bad. You go ahead.
Career Grand Slam for Rory. I mean, 11 years in the making. I just saw a graphic. It was like 10 years and 8 months ago was when he last won his most recent major. That's, I mean, pretty incredible stuff right there. Becomes the sixth golfer to win a career Grand Slam of all time. Really just cementing his spot in the history books among golf legends.
I mean, I apologize for dang near just cutting you off there at the beginning there because, like, I just, to me, like, this was just the story. Like, it couldn't have gone any other way for Rory, for him to conquer those demons at Augusta. Because say what you want about, oh, he just has demons as a whole in the majors. Yep. There is something about Augusta that ever since he blew it in 2011, when he had a four-shot lead on the back nine, and he shot ended up shooting an 80, Augusta National has just been his kryptonite. And this round, Jacob, I don't know if I've watched a round of golf where a golfer has hit the subsequent combinations of greatest shots I've ever seen and worst shots I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, when Rory hits that fader in between the trees, I can't remember what – he does that weird little – like he just jerked his club back as soon as he hit – it cozies up to about 6 feet, and then he does the exact same thing almost on the edge – and he hits a looping draw that lands right there. And then, again, for him to then absolutely duff that wedge into the creek on 13, yeah. I believe that was. I mean, and the emotion that he showed that we just saw.
Yeah.
That was live footage of a guy literally taking a monkey off of his back and just a 50-pound weight off the back of his shoulders, just letting it all out. Yeah. I was rooting for him the whole way. I'm sure you were too. It was unbelievable. Greatest round of golf I've ever watched.
Yeah, that's what I was watching it with a couple of my family members. I mean, definitely the most like eye-opening. Like I was this far away from the TV the whole time. Round of golf that I've ever seen, and it just happened to be Sunday at the Masters. I mean, like you said, on the 18th green, he exercised about 50 demons that have been traveling around from him. I mean, just broke down into tears. Caddy's his best friend. Can't really write it up any better than how it was. That, I mean, there were multiple times where I thought it was over. One, the double bogey on hole number one, and then the double bogey on 13 after he hit it into Ray's Creek. I was just sitting there like, dude, are we being serious? But then, I mean, like you said, just some of the worst golf shots. I mean, he had like a lob wedge going in on 13 and just absolutely duffed it into the creek. And then the drive on hole number one and two was probably about a three-shot swing where he missed the bunker, or he hit it in the bunkers by like this much in places that he would have carried it. I mean, not carry, but it would have hit the downslope on the bunker and rolled about 60 more yards and given him like 100 and something yards going in on a par four. I mean, just an incredible showing, like the resiliency that he had to have throughout that whole round. I mean, let alone playing with Bryson. I feel like Bryson falling off there toward like, what was it, like hole seven or eight, like toward the end of the front nine, he kind of just started falling off, and it became between Rory and Justin Rose, who he ultimately beat in the playoff. But, I mean, some of the worst shots and some of the best shots that we had seen. The 7-iron, or I think it was a 7-iron on, what was it, 15? It looked almost exactly like the shot he hit there yesterday. And what was that, Tiger Shot in like 2001, I think, that they kept showing like the side by side comparison of. That was stuff of legends right there.
Oh, I know. And Jacob, like how our parents or our dads told us growing up about, oh, you should have seen that shot Tiger hit to win it, and however many times he did, and this, that, and the other. We're going to tell our kids, you should have seen when Rory McIlroy threw a dart on hole 18 against Justin Rose in the playoff. Because to me, that shot right there was the most impressive given the circumstances and the pressure and everything. Justin Rose pipes a driver and then throws pretty much a dart that almost landed in the
I
hole.
thought it was gonna dunk.
That was tracking towards a little bounce and bad break for Rose that it didn't have any type of backspin or anything, and it lands about 10 feet or something. For Rory to step up on, which previously when he played hole 18 in regulation, he hit it into the bunker. For
Yep.
him to step up and put it inside of Justin Rose to about 4 feet dang near, unreal stuff. And credit to Justin Rose too, man. He had the round of his life to sink that putt on 18 to tie McIlroy at that time. Just unreal stuff. And Justin Rose loses in a playoff at the Masters for the second time in his career. Sergio
Yeah.
Garcia in 2017 and now to Rory in 2025.
Yep. The difference between those two approach shots on 18, whenever they played it the second time, is for me, it comes down to driving distance. Justin Rose had to hit an 8 iron, and Rory hit gap wedge. That just, I mean, that shows you how much his like speed training and distance training and all that stuff has really, I mean, helped him so much throughout the latter part of his career. I mean, being able to have a gap wedge going in there as opposed to an 8 iron, that's really the difference. It's just the spin and the bounce that he got right there. He was able to land it right on that back slope, the backstop, and it just trickled right down to, like you said, about 4 feet. It's really awesome. If he would have missed that putt, I would have had no idea what to do.
That's the thing that I was about to say is if he doesn't get it done this time, then I genuinely don't know. Like, those years that he had pent up of never getting it done, to add this onto that, I don't know if he ever would have won it. I don't
Yep.
know if he ever would have gone over the mental just barrier that if he would have lost
Yeah.
this one, but he got it done. Good for Rory, completing the career Grand Slam, only joins five other players in the history to do it. That was one of the greatest Masters Sundays I've ever seen.
I
Well,
definitely, at least in my golf viewing experience, it was by far the most exhilarating. I mean, like I said, inches away from the TV. And now we go from him, if he doesn't make that putt, maybe he never gets it done, to looking ahead. They're playing Quail Hollow this year, a course that he's won at 4 times. I think that's the PGA Championship. And then the Open, the British Open, is in Northern Ireland, back in his hometown. So now we're looking at, he's probably going to be the odds-on favorite to go ahead and win those. So going from maybe he never gets it done to, shoot, he's got a chance to do a Tiger Slam or a Grand Slam in 1 year. Like,
oh, yeah, no, that'll be interesting to see. And we will definitely be covering that when that time comes. But now,
absolutely.
Jacob, I feel we have to go from such an amazing just event, an amazing just overall thing for sport, to a topic that honestly, not good for sport, at least for this sport. For those that live under a rock, Niko Yamaliava essentially held out in college for a new contract. And Tennessee, credit to Tennessee, not a Tennessee guy whatsoever. I don't like them at all, but credit to Josh Heupel and the Tennessee program for not allowing that.
I agree.
Heupel came up and said, we are moving on from him. No one is bigger than Tennessee, even myself. That was commendable from Heupel. Say what you want about him and just all that. Like, he's a good coach, and I'm very glad that they did not stand for Nico essentially holding the program hostage. I'll get into my thoughts here in a second, just overall of what I thought of it. But Jacob, I'll just open it up to you because I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts about it as
Yeah.
well.
I mean, to me, from what we grew up watching and what really made us fall in love with the sport of college football is no more. It's glorified minor leagues. I mean, like you said, people holding out for contracts in college after already making $2.4 million a year and having your tuition paid for, which is not cheap by any means as someone who's still paying off student loans. I mean, dude, trying to hold your coach and your program hostage via an agent or your dad, whoever it is. I feel like his dad had quite a bit to do with this. And I mean, this pay for play NIL stuff needs some kind of regulation. College football needs a governing body, like maybe a commissioner or someone like that. They just need rules. Everything is just kind of like the free market. So, I mean, I know there's people on social media that I saw at least like commending Nico, like, yeah, dude, go get your bag. Like, it's a free market economy. You know what you're worth. He wasn't even good. Like, I get it. He's a 5-star, 6'6", 200 and whatever pounds. He played like trash last year. Out of his 20 something touchdown passes, only 9 of them were against power 4 opponents. And okay, so I have to give credit to Josh Pate here. So I've watched a little bit of his episode on Nico coming into this. And he put out a couple tweets as well saying that Nico was going to hold out of the Ohio State game. And his reasoning was like, it's like, oh, he's making $2.4 million, but that's only allocated for 12 games. Like, they're going to play a 13th game and possibly a 14th or a 15th game, maybe even 16 if they would have made the conference championship game. It's like trying to get more money for your client. Like, I feel like you agree to a contract, especially when it's that much. Like, you're taking up that much of your teammates' potential salary. Like, everything that he makes could have been distributed to several other players, several other high school guys that they could have gotten in, other portal guys that they could have gotten in. It's all in all, it's just a lose situation for Nico, because now his public image is kind of trash. I mean, I kind of agree with that. It's kind of a bad move on his part, I think. And it's a lose for Tennessee, because now they don't have their starting quarterback. And all in all, it's a lose for the fans as well. I mean, as funny as it is for people like us, true Georgia fans, it's not good. It's not good for the sport. Like, yeah, it makes our week 3 game a little bit easier, probably, against them. But yeah, that's all I got there. It's a lose-lose for everyone involved.
Yeah, and I'm glad you framed it that way, because I'm pretty similar in that regard. Like, I see a lot of people taking sides in this. You're either team Nico or team Tennessee or your team, like, whatever the team is. But in my mind, like, no one is in the right in this situation. It's on Nico for, I mean, like, flat out, Nico, who do you think you are? That's my question. Like, who do you think you are? I get, like, maybe it's agents or dad that is more than likely the overall, like, driver of this situation. Well, in that case, like, who do you guys think that he is? Because, like you said, Jacob, pretty mediocre quarterback, all things considered. That's first of all, is Nico, I think you're just overblowing what you think your worth is. And two, it's on just college football as a whole for letting it get to the point where players are essentially empowered and allowed to do this. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, yes, it is basically free market. If Nico holds out and essentially, like we have said plenty of times, holding his program hostage and feels that he can get more, and he, like, why wouldn't you? You know, if you think you can get more, then you try to go get more. So in that instance, like, okay, yeah, cool. I guess, like, that you can do that. But I don't know. It's just money. It's money, money, money. And that's not, like, a crazy take that I'm pulling out. Like everything is about money right now, and somebody, there needs to be a governing body. There needs to be rules and regulations. Everyone has said this since the beginning, and I mean that's essentially what it's got to be. I know that the rev share model's coming out. I'm not exactly sure exactly how that works, but correct me if I'm wrong. It's essentially these programs are essentially going to get, what is it, $20 million, and it's, what'd you say? How much?
$22.5 million per athletic department. That has to be split through all sports.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then at that point, there's still some controversy around that, because then
Yeah.
it's, how does Title IX affect that? Like, if you get that much for a guy's sport, is then the girl's sport going to get that much exactly? So they still have to figure that out. I hope the rev share at least just helps the situation a little bit. And then it feels like NIL and transfer portal, they've always been one and two. They've always been right there, because they essentially coincide with each other, coming out essentially the same time. I mean, we're going to talk about G-Day at some point in this show, and a topic that's going to come up is, who is there? Do we have people that are going to enter the spring portal? The fact that there even is a spring portal is crazy. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? And I get there needs to be certain exceptions for, okay, let's say your coach leaves or retires randomly or something, then you have that time period. But I don't know. It's just a bad situation all around. And I'm, all things aside, negative part aside, it's pretty good for Georgia. Like,
Yeah.
we like this, because we had to go into Knoxville with, again, we've said we don't think Nico's the greatest quarterback, but again, he has a year of experience under his belt, and he would have, been better, we think. And now they're going to have to start a first-year quarterback against Georgia in week two. So, all in
Yeah.
all, negative for the sport, but good for us. So.
Yep. I just want to touch on one more thing. It's like all of this, like being super publicized, like as it is, he's essentially jeopardizing future NFL earnings for getting a bag now. Like he could have just went through his entire Tennessee making $2.4 million a year, which is really good money, and then probably would have been a first or second round pick based on measurables alone. Now he's going to be attached with the tag of all these types of character concerns. Like, what about his family, his dad, like everything? Is his dad his agent? Like, what's going on here? Like, what's the dynamic between them? And I'm sure, I mean, NFL scouts, they're going to talk to people at Tennessee about Nico if they're interested in drafting him. You have to think that Josh Heupel's not going to have a lot of nice things to say about him, especially behind closed doors. Like, I feel like the more and more that comes out of this situation, the worse it's going to get for Nico, because it's probably going to come out the fact that he wasn't a great team player, or he didn't practice hard, or he was complaining about not getting enough money for the entire year. And then it's a really lose situation for everyone involved. And I think Nico might have the most to lose in the situation.
And this is why, moving forward for just programs in general, it is so important to just stack talent, especially in the quarterback room, because quarterbacks are going to be the most sought after NIL in the portal every single year. And Tennessee, I mean, say what you want about how it's going to be tough on, they still have really talented quarterbacks in that room. They have the four-star Jake Merklinger, who's from the state of Georgia, and then you have the George McIntyre kid, and I'm pretty sure they have the number one quarterback in 2026,
That phase on Brandon.
Faison Brandon. So they've at least prepared for this. So we're gonna see how it goes for them. But that game against Georgia week two gonna be very interesting. I would assume it's probably gonna be Merklinger starting, but maybe they go to the portal for a quarterback. It's really just gonna depend on where they feel that what their needs are overall.
Yep.
So
I agree. It's probably going to be Merklinger. I could definitely see him taking maybe a depth piece at quarterback if there even is one that enter the spring portal. I mean, I feel like what is this, our third or fourth year of a spring portal? The December portal is the one where it's like everybody and their mother is in the portal. This one's usually a bit quieter, but I mean, We'll probably know a lot more about that in our next recording because it does open this upcoming week on Tuesday, I believe, the 15th. So we will have some Spring Portal news for sure. In the meantime, about Nico, everything that we've seen is there's going to be three or four big players in his transfer portal recruitment. The initial first thought was USC being a Southern California guy, and then UCLA. And then a team like Tulane was a name that I kept seeing pop up under the Nico graphics. And then more recently, North Carolina. Bill Belichick looking for a true pro's pro, already got experience holding out of contracts and stuff like that. So, I mean, yeah, that would definitely be the most interesting destination for me. I mean, especially because like the other programs are at least a little bit farther away from the SEC. But North Carolina is kind of in SEC territory. And then they also have Bill Belichick as their head coach. So they're going to make some headlines about it for sure.
If there's one guy in college football right now that doesn't give a crap if a guy holds out for a better contract, it's Bill Belichick because he's dealt with that so much over the course of his
For the
career in the
past 50
NFL.
years.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Bill Belichick's like, what's the big deal? Like, he just wants another contract. We'll give it to him. Or
We'll
no,
give it to
more
him.
accurate,
You want 4 million? Write the check.
be like, I don't get the big deal. Like, well, we'll give him
Mike
better
Lombardi, write the
contract.
check.
Yeah, give him better. Oh. If he goes to North Carolina, that would be, I mean, they're essentially going to be must-see TV. And
Yeah.
now I don't know exactly how you're going to see it with the ACC network, but
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I was looking forward to watching North Carolina regardless this year. I mean, if they get Nico after all this crap that's going on, that's definitely going to be must-watch TV.
Well, good topic there, and
That's all we got on that.
yeah, that's all we got so far on that. But more to come, as Jacob said, with the spring portal opening up this upcoming week.
Yep.
But now we have to go to another not so great thing, at least for the Georgia perspective. Georgia Bay. Oh, wait. No.
What do you
Scrap that.
mean?
We. Never mind. Never mind. What
It's a
am I
great
talking
topic.
about? Not great. We. It's actually amazing. Georgia baseball wins the series against Arkansas. For some reason, I was still in the mindset of the Texas sweep.
Yeah,
But
that was
yeah.
not a good one.
Now, you know what it was? I was on the heels of the Texas sweep and also us losing 13-3 in game one.
Yeah, that was an ugly one, game one. I mean, we kept it close for seemingly most of the game. I think it was like late seventh inning or eighth inning. It was like, I think it was 5-3 we were down, and then they scored 10 runs in like 6 minutes or something like that. I just kept checking the score because I didn't have a TV at the time. We were at dinner. I just kept checking the score. I was like, oh my God, they just keep scoring. The Twitter timeline was not looking too hot about then. But a couple bounce back games.
No, yeah, for sure. And for us to win the series off a walk-off homer for a guy on the bench, what was his name? Like Hunter Harvey? He's like a bench guy for us.
It was Henry Hunter.
Henry
Henry
Hunter,
Hunter.
yeah, Hunter
Yeah.
Harvey, Henry Hunter.
Hunter Harvey.
Lefty-lefty matchup, bomb to right center field for us to win that series against. Were they
Were
the
number
number one
one.
team?
Yeah.
They were number one.
Number one.
Boom. And now, let me see. Who do we have coming up? Because I know we probably have a midweek game against like a.
We play Tech. We play Tech at Truist Park on Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
Speaking of must-watch TV.
That is going to be. But unless it's on SEC Network Plus Premium or whatever the crap you have to watch a baseball game nowadays. Gosh.
Hope not. I can check real quick. Dude, that would suck if we can't watch it. But yeah, that's going to be a big game against Tech. They've had a good team so far this year. No slouch.
Okay. Yep. So, and then this upcoming weekend, we have a three game series against Vanderbilt.
Doesn't even have the listing of the channel on ESPN, so
Oh, yeah, no, I'm
probably going to be
listening.
tough to watch. You're going to have to look for it.
Yeah, you might have to listen to it on the radio or we can get some binoculars and go sit on a hill or something. Gosh.
Who'd you say we play this upcoming week? Vanderbilt?
Vanderbilt.
Are they the Vandy of old, like baseball school? Or are they've kind of fallen off a little bit?
Yeah, like Vandy baseball was like, they were the measuring stick in terms of whenever you were making a hyperbole and you were saying like a guy in high school was really good, you're like, dude, this guy's probably like a Vandy commit or something. Whereas that was Alabama back in the day where it was like, man, this guy's probably like committed to Bama or something. Let's see. What is their record? I'm doing some research. Vanderbilt baseball record.
I know they don't feed the trees. That's all I know.
No, they don't. I don't know what the trees they got in Nashville. They are 26-10. They're 8-7 in the SEC.
They're
So
ranked.
yeah, still a solid team, but definitely not the Vandy boys of old.
Yeah. I think we're our record's 32-6, which is the best start in Georgia baseball history. So pretty good. New rankings come out tomorrow. We're going to be able to see if we've moved up. You would have to imagine taking a series from the number one team in the country. We'd move up a little bit. I think we're 7 right now.
Yeah, if I had to, again, not too sure about where everyone else in the pack did this weekend, but I mean, yeah, I think like fourth or fifth, probably.
Yeah, that would be a good
Something
guess.
like that.
And then Georgia Tech will be, I think they're like 15 or something like that. So that'll be a ranked midweek game, which would be highly entertaining if you're able to find it. And then you said 3-game series, so we're Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yep. No, it's actually a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. And then we
Okay.
play Tuesday, and then we play that upcoming Tuesday against Clemson.
Another ranked midweek game with a SE or ACC powerhouse. I mean, they're top 5, aren't they? I think they're very good.
I don't know. I'm on georgiadogs.com, so they don't have like any rankings or anything,
Gotcha.
which I wish they would.
Yeah.
But that game will, the Clemson game will be on ESPNU, so you'll actually be
Nice.
able to watch a game. Who would have ever thought?
Nice. Hopefully we get that for this week against Georgia Tech. That would be nice. I
Oh,
mean,
yeah.
it's interstate matchup rivalry being played at the local MLB team stadium. Come on. Give us
That's
a
pretty
TV
sick.
broadcast.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're gonna stay on the Georgia topics because, again, we're mainly Georgia show here. We got basketball, and Georgia has been cooking in the portal. You knew we had to. We made the tournament, but we knew that this was not gonna be the finished product team. And of course, with Silas Demery entering the portal and some other key
RJ
pieces.
Godfrey.
Yeah, RJ Godfrey, which I mean,
Happy to lose that one.
yeah, some of us, Jacob mostly, are very, very, very excited that he is not here anymore. Good luck to you, RJ, but just not here.
A glorified football player playing basketball. Average more fouls and points.
You better be careful, bro. If you catch RJ Godfrey on the wrong day on the street, dude, he would. I mean, with the amount of offensive fouls he had this year, he'd take that shoulder. And he's gonna barrel that into your chest and might cave your chest in, dude, because he did that a lot on the basketball court.
Yeah, he sure did. That was kind of what he was known for. It was to the point where in the Gonzaga game we were talking, we were like, dude, send out RJ Godfrey, just put a hit on one of their players like immediately. Kick him out of the game. Better for both teams overall.
Yeah, Jacob is kidding. We don't condone, injuring players on, that was a. I'll leave Jacob to have that talk.
No, we don't condone that. Anyways, let's talk about some of
Yeah.
the portal acquisitions after losing Silas, RJ Godfrey, and then DeShane Montgomery also hit the
Oh,
portal.
yeah, because that's a big loss.
Yeah, we kind of saw that one coming. He started off the season relatively hot. I mean, played quite a bit, and then it was like halfway through the season, it was like, you're never going to see the court again. Like, okay, it was very interesting. The newest development in the portal that we have, I have these pulled up right here. Kanan Catchings today has committed to Georgia. 6'9" freshman, former top 40 recruit, averaged about 7.5 points per game this season from BYU and shooting 35% from three. I have to think that this is going to be a pretty insane acquisition for us. I mean, he's going to pair well with Samto on the inside, who we have confirmed is coming back. Samto and Blue Kane are coming back. And then just seems like kind of a power forward who can actually score and stretch the floor, which is clearly not something that we're used to. him and Dylan James are both gonna probably take on that similar role. And hopefully we don't have to see Dylan James's ugly jump shot as much.
For all the talk about Dylan James's jump shot, it was still crazy going into the tournament. He was a 40% 3-point shooter.
Relatively efficient. Yeah, 40% on like 13 attempts, but still efficient. Yeah, but he only made like, he didn't make too many.
Yeah, but no, I mean, Cannon Catchings, I mean, I guess they just ran out of NIL money down there at BYU. I mean,
God, they're paying, yeah.
they're paying Robert Wright, the freshman from Baylor, like a buttload of money, and then the AJ DeBanza, however you say his name, number one recruit in the nation, paying
Yep.
him a bunch of money. I guess Cannon was, I mean, Georgia probably opened it up some and said, hey man, you're not getting as much, you BYU will gladly make you a starter or a very key player here. So, I mean,
Mike
again,
White
maybe
cooking.
exactly Mike White, which this is not the thing about it is this is not the concern with Mike White. We know that he's going to bring in talent. We know that he can recruit, and we know that he's going to overall give us a good to decent team every year. It's just going to be a matter of his in-game coaching as a whole. Because when it comes to just straight up in-game coaching, the SEC has some of the best in the nation.
Yeah.
Even if you're just an average, just overall coach, you're in the bottom third of coaches. So we're gonna have to see if Mike White can get that cooking. So in addition to Cannon Catchings, Jeremiah Wilkinson from Cal, 15 point per game score, gonna most likely be our starting point guard,
Yeah.
which is Georgia kid, went to Cal, now he's here. And so yes, if I'm looking at this correctly, this is what a potential starting lineup would look like with the new transfer included. We'd have Jeremiah Wilkinson at the point, Blue Kane at shooting guard, Cannon Catchings at small forward, Dylan James at power forward, and Sompto at center.
Yeah. Mike White's not done either. I saw that, was it Darian Reed from Alabama? He was like the number 15 something player. He's in the same recruiting class as Cannon Catchings. He entered the portal with a no contact clause and a 100% crystal ball to the University of Georgia. So he would also be in that 3-4 rotation with Catchings and Dylan James. That would be another great addition to the team. I mean, we could have a pretty solid year this year, but I wanted to touch on this. You mentioned Jeremiah Wilkinson. His stat line from last year was insane. So he averaged 15.1 points per game. We know that. Good. Yes. 0.1 rebounds per game, 0.1 assists per game. Dude, just a straight shooter.
I mean, this guy's not even thinking about passing the ball or swinging the rock.
Just bucket getter.
I mean, you have to literally go to average 0.1 assists. You have to quite literally go like 10 games in a row without an assist and then go randomly on the 11th one and then go another 10 without an assist.
Yep.
It's one thing to average like 1.5 or maybe 2 or something, but 0.1 is insane. I mean, who, what was his name? Silas. He wasn't much of a passing point guard either. You know? So
Nope.
that's the only thing I worry about is if we're essentially just replicating that, but with Jeremiah Wilkinson, because that was one of the things. Now Savo, he's in the portal already. But Savo Dresich, the guy that we got, he was a freshman last year, and why I didn't understand why he played at all is that he is that traditional pass first point guard. And I thought that we could have really benefited from changing up the offense at times to just get the whole floor involved. But hey, I guess Mike White sees something, and Jeremiah Wilkinson, will he average more than 0.1 assists next year?
I'm gonna have to go with yes. Might not average more than 3 or 4, though, which I think was Silas's line this year. He averaged like 3 or 4 assists per game. But one more thing on Wilkinson. He started off coming off the bench for Cal, And then he started the final 14 games of the season. In those final 14 games of the season, he averaged 23.2 points per game. So he might actually be like a legit bucket getter. Silas turned into that toward the end of the year. Like he found his jumper and all that. But I mean, early on, he was just like a pile driver. Like he's just going to take it to the rack every single time. Essentially no bag as a point guard. Like, yes, he's good. I get it. He's big and tall and physical and he could get in the lane really well. But I mean, having a point guard with kind of a jump shot would be a nice change of pace.
Oh yeah. And speaking of jump shots, we got this guy, Justin Bailey from Wofford, a 40% 3-point shooter. Thank the Lord, because as long as I've been a Georgia fan and watching basketball, this might just be perception, and I don't know our exact statistics when it comes to this. It feels like we are never a good like 3-point shooting team. And if we are, it's like we're like barely average. So this was huge to, again, just get a guy that can spread the floor along with Blue Kane, because right now Blue Kane's our best shooter. And I don't know what Blue Kane's
not doing. A great shooter.
He's not either. Like he was probably, if I had to guess Blue Kane's 3-point field goal percentage last year, I would guess it was like 33.
Yeah, I was going to say 32, 33.
Let's test that. Blue Kane 3 stats. Let's see if we're ball knowers. 34%.
How many? 34?
34%.
Yeah, I mean, that's average. You have to think it's going to go up a little bit more this year. If we can get him to like a 36, 37% 3-point shooter on the volume that he's going to have to take for us this year, that's going to be pretty solid. Along with Justin Bailey, I wouldn't be surprised if Justin Bailey is that starting point guard over Wilkinson. I mean, just the passing thing is kind of baffling to me with him playing point guard. I mean, 0.1 assists is like, you have to be like actively trying to not pass to your teammates.
Now, is this a situation?
He's a bit bigger too. I mean, just a little bit more of a complete player.
Now, is this just a situation where we're not really grasping how bad Cal was potentially to where he didn't have anybody? I don't know what Cal's record was, but I don't think they were very good.
I don't think they were either. But we know Wofford made the tournament. So they won their conference. 6'3", 185 pounds. He averaged 9.6 per game, 3.5 rebounds. Like you said, 45.5% 3-point shooter. And he also led their team in steals. So that's pretty good. It seems like more of a, I don't know, necessarily a Mike White point guard. But then that would have Jeremiah Wilkinson coming in as that strict bucket getter off the bench. Like your sixth man. You need a shot or two or three. You need to start a run with a couple threes. That might be his preferred role.
Yeah, because he, like you said, he started on the bench at Cal. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Jacob.
Scoring point guards it's going to be nice.
I don't know. I mean,
kind of like what Silas was toward the end of the year. But right at the beginning of the year and the first couple games in SEC play when we were on that skid, dude was averaging like 5 points per game over like six or seven games. So I was like, bro, we cannot keep doing this. I have very, very mixed opinions on Georgia basketball. They've been up and down and up and down all year, as you know. Try to keep me a little bit more level-headed, but I guess this past season was a success, so you're right. You made the tournament. Congratulations. Yeah. Now don't get blown out by 60 points this time.
Hey, you know, we'll see just with more portal additions to come. It looks like we're going to get that Darren Reed guy. So, yes, I am 100%. I was happy we made the tournament. I think that was a success. But now we need to follow that up. We need to make the tourney again because there is no excuse for a
state. We need to win in the tourney this time.
There's no excuse.
Top 20 freshman recruiting class coming in as well. Jacob Wilkins and then someone else.
Kareem Stagg.
Oh, yeah, Kareem Stagg.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, definitely going to be solid. I think we're going to be just as good as we were this past year. Should be better.
No, yeah, for sure. All right. Last topic of the day. and some would say it's the most important. That's the Georgia Spring Game, G-Day. G-Day happened. It was not televised, but aggregating certain information, people that were there. We actually had a friend that was there, so he was able to shed some knowledge for us. He could say he
Inside
was,
sources.
inside. Not our friend. We had an inside source there. Make it sound more official. But Jacob, I'll just let you open up here because I know you had a lot to talk about by just, talking to him for a good bit. So just get your overall impressions about everything and what you thought.
Yeah, I talked to sources for a while, directly after the spring game on the way back. So, all in all, the overarching theory is that we are the University of Georgia. We're going to be really, really good again. It might not matter who the quarterback is. We're going to be really good, but it's going to be Gunnar Stockton. The thing that I'm seeing the most when it at least comes to quarterback play is our offense this year is going to be very, very different. We didn't run the ball a ton in the spring game, but that's to prevent head-on collisions and injuries. Because, I mean, when you got the 8 to 10 biggest guys on the field just going head-on every single play, you're going to end up with some injuries, as that is the sport of football. So we threw the ball, I think, 80-something times combined between both red and black teams. Neither quarterback had a good completion percentage. And that's why I was going to go off of this, that it's going to be a vertical-based offense. It's going to be a lot of play action, a lot of deep shots, and Gunnar Stockton throws a very pretty deep ball. It just looks nice. And our receiving room has probably had the biggest overhaul of just about any position group in all of college football. We went from having a bunch of slot and Z receiver body types, smaller, faster, shiftier receivers. Now it's like there's a height requirement to get into the Georgia receiver room. Like, you got to be 6'2", 6'3". You got to be able to go up and get jump balls. I mean, I asked him who he thought the best player on the team was from an inside point of view. He said Colby Young. I think he's going to be a big difference maker for us now that he's going to be back fully with the team. And one that I like to see a lot of was London Humphreys. I mean, I feel like people discount him for how big he actually is. I mean, he's not going to be our starting X receiver because that's going to be Colby Young. He's more of that just bigger body type, almost think like a basketball player, like getting up and jumping and getting rebounds. But London is 6'2 and a half, 6'3, and he's going to be the run after the catch guy. He's going to be catch it over the middle and take it for 70 kind of guy. He had a great stat line. I think he had 85 yards receiving on 5 catches. He had one drive fully to himself where he caught a 50-yard bomb and then a 25-yard touchdown on the very next play. Again, I think people really discount his size because he is going to be the Z receiver, and those aren't huge normally. It's like a Ja'Marr Chase would probably be. Ladd McConkey is kind of like your Z body type. But I mean, having a Z that's 6'3", and then that frees up to be able to play both Dylan Bell and Zachariah Branch in the slot. It's gonna be quite a room for sure. And that's not even really talking that much about Zachariah Branch and Noah Thomas. They didn't get too much run in the spring game. It's almost like Kirby just tucked them away. It's like, we know you're gonna be like that. We don't have to throw it to you on every third play. G-Day for. At least from my point of view, is just kind of getting the players who don't necessarily play all too much in there.
Oh, yeah, and very good just overall synopsis right there. I think you touched on it for me. Just my biggest takeaway is just how much we threw the ball vertically. And it's almost as if that is, it almost seemed like we were doing it, I don't want to say too much, but we were almost like forcing ourselves to throw the ball deep with both quarterbacks in every unit. So that's really showing me, like, I really believe that we're trying to evolve our offense from being, like you said with Carson Beck last year, the biggest thing with him that for the life of me, I could not understand why he wasn't good at this throw, it was the deep ball. Anything over the middle of the field, short, quick, short game, medium game, layering the ball like that was his game. But you asked this guy to throw it 30 yards forward, and he turned it. He couldn't throw a football. And, you know, the receivers didn't help him a lot last year with those deep balls, because a lot of those deep balls were going to Arian Smith. I like Arian Smith. Don't get this the wrong way, but he just very frustrated me. But just – and like I said, with Gunnar Stockton, he threw the ball deep good against Notre Dame. Now, we didn't have a lot because our offensive line was getting whipped and he didn't really have a lot of time. But he has the ability to stretch that ball vertically and to throw those deep shots. And with Zachariah Branch and just all the overall weapons that we brought in, I was very pleased. And listen, I don't give a crap about interceptions in a spring game, to be honest with you. I could care less. I want quarterbacks to be like trying to force throws and to see if they can almost test their arm to see, hold on, now, can I hit this in the game? Could I hit my back foot and throw this over this linebacker's head and in between this safety? You know, that's why Puglisi, he's a gunslinger. He threw a pick. Now, I will say, with the videos I saw, that was a pretty bad interception. He, like, threw it right at the DB. But the point still stands. And I'm just so excited. And pretty much everything that we talked about leading in, I mean, is what I heard and what we've heard is basically all that I wanted coming into the spring game, at least. So I'm very happy. Gunner's going to be QB1. Obviously, like, that's no news. And I mean, we're going to be better than last year. Like, I don't think that's a hot take, but anyone that's around the program right now, but I'm very excited about what we're going to be this year.
Yep. I mean, I could talk about the offense and all these receivers all day, but we got to go to the defense real quick here. The linebackers are as advertised. Everything we talked about in our last two episodes, I mean, C.J. Allen, Raylan Wilson, Chris Cole, and Justin Williams, whichever of those four was on the field, they were seemingly the best four players on the field at all times. And another big winner that I thought was the defensive back unit. Like I said earlier, quarterbacks didn't complete a lot of passes. They were both sub 50%. I think Gunner might have been exactly at 50% completion. But in the first half, it started off pretty slow, because we were running the deep balls the whole time, but the DBs were just, they were breaking them up. They were lockstep in running with the wide receivers. I mean, which is a great sign considering we think the wide receivers are going to be some of the most talented in the country. Having defensive backs that can be in lockstep with them, it was great to see. Dominic Kelly, true freshman, had an interception. He's one of those reclassified guys. He reclassified, so he's like 17. He should be a senior in high school. And he had a pick, brought it back for 30-something yards, too. I think that was the one against Puglisi, if I'm not wrong.
And then Daniel 24 Harris, was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's him. And then Daniel Harris had a great pick on a Gunner deep ball, where he was throwing to, I believe, Colby Young. And, I mean, it was just a good quarterback throwing a good pass to a good receiver, but the DB made a great play. I mean, he was in lockstep with him, high point of the ball, like toe tapped in the back corner of the end zone. I was like, dude, that's what you want to see from your safety group. Didn't hear KJ Bolden's name all too much, which is exactly what you're looking for in your free safety. I mean, it's probably just throwing the ball the other way for most of the time, because that's what I would do, would not target him. We had Ja'Cory Thomas essentially was the starter for strong safety. But one of those transfer portal guys that mixed in there wasn't Jaden Harris like we initially thought. It was Adrian Maddox. He had a couple of flash plays for sure. And he was also rotating in at the star as well. I know star was one of our concerns. Jonel Aguero looked great in pass coverage today, or the other day, yesterday. Looked more fluid in the hips, just able to run down the field. He had quite a few pass breakups. And then the second half is when the offenses and the receivers started to get their own too. It was essentially like we were throwing 50-50 balls every other play. And then there would be breakup and then 50-yard completion, breakup, 50-yard completion, breakup, 30-yard completion. So that's why the quarterbacks didn't have the most eye-popping stats, but all position groups look good in my opinion.
And I'm glad that we did this not only for the offense of just getting them comfortable pushing the ball downfield, but also putting that stress on our defense. Because nowadays in college football, you're going against so many offenses that are trying to do exactly that, push the ball vertically. And we got in trouble at times last year doing that, most famously against Alabama. And now that we're doing that in the spring, I love to see that. And I'm glad to hear that the DBs, for the most part, held up. And Dominic Kelly, that is a good. That guy right there, I didn't forget about him, like I knew of him, but I almost forgot about him when we were talking about the defense. Another early enrollee, 17-year-old, that, if I'm not mistaken, was he a California guy? I want to say he was
He was IMG.
okay, maybe I'm thinking of someone else. IMG, yeah. No, that's nice. And speaking of freshmen, once again, I told you guys, you're gonna see Elias Williams on that field. And there are going to be people who are going to be like, who is that? And I saw plenty of, when I was scrolling Twitter, saw people taking pictures of Elias Williams on that field being like, this guy is literally LeBron James's height. Like
Yeah, no, I
this.
saw that same thing. That was Anthony Dasher's tweet. He said, Elias Williams, the exact same measurables as LeBron James. I was like, oh my God, dude. Find a way to get him on the field early and often.
Oh, I know. And I speaking of the tight ends, I did see Ethan Barbour had a nice catch over the middle on a seam ball. I don't know who threw it to him. It was either Colter Ginn or Puglisi, I want to
I
say.
think it was Pub.
Pug, yeah. Again, love to see that. He looked just, I mean, you think of what these guys are going to look like on the field, and then when you actually see it, now again, we're seeing from videos that people took in the stadium, but Ethan Barbour looked all bit of the part of an SEC tight end as a true freshman. Great stuff.
One of the undersung guys that we haven't talked as much about in the tight end room too, Jaden Riddell.
Yes.
He took a little out route, broke a tackle, and went for like 30, 35 down the sideline. Looked like, I mean, he's running like a deer out there. It's gonna be big, strong, fast, good hands, and really tough to tackle. He's also gonna find his way on the field. I mean, at this point, it seems like we're gonna have five tight ends that we're gonna have to play this year. They all specialize in something a little bit different. No two of them have like the same exact play style. But Riddell, since he is some of that bigger body type, he's probably gonna be Oscar Delp's backup in that traditional Y tight end role. I've heard he's looked great in pass protection in the spring as well. Just a big body, almost an extension of the offensive line.
Oh yeah, and yeah, shout out to you for bringing that up because it's almost a disservice to us that we haven't brought up Jaden Riddell yet, which he is. I mean, we're talking a lot about Elias Williams and Barbour, and those guys are going to have that time, but Riddell's above them, and he's going to get, like you said, he's going to be that Oscar Delp 2.0 Y tight end attached to the line of scrimmage. So great stuff there. And trying to think about anything else that I can think of, but overall, I think.
Elijah Griffin flashed a lot on the
Yes.
interior defensive line. Another one of those freshmen that's going to play early and often. Think of JJA from last year, not starting in the Clemson game, but getting significant minutes in Clemson game week one. Isaiah Gibson, we have questions at edge. My questions about the secondary and the star position were all seemingly answered for most of them. But the only thing that I haven't really had answered is who's going to be that traditional edge. We didn't get to see Gabe Harris since he was hurt. And I don't think JJA played too much. But then again, we got to see Isaiah Gibson, who looks exactly like Gabe Harris because he took his number 29. Gabe Harris is zero now. So he's going to be our new big O. And then Isaiah Gibson, 29 off the edge. And Chase Linton flashed as a freshman from our general area. I know he's one of the only like current Georgia players that we've gotten to see in person because we've watched him play at North Atlanta. He flashed, create some havoc plays. That's how they like to determine them. We don't necessarily count sacks or tackles for loss in a spring game because quarterbacks are untouched. So havoc plays like whenever you just disrupt the pocket and blow up the play. Essentially, I think Chase Linton had the most or tied with the most on the team. I think he had three havoc plays.
No, that's amazing. And Chase Linton too. I mean, I think he is he number 85 or something. He has like
Yeah.
Yes. Another
Like
weird
a
number.
Leonard Floyd. That's what it reminds me of, 84, 85.
No, I always love those weird number guys.
Yeah.
Darnell Washington kind of started the trend with the zero for a 6'8" tight end. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? And now going into, like you said, Chase Linton. I forgot to bring up Elijah Griffin because I was seeing videos about him warming up, and everyone down there was saying, yep, I mean, this guy, height, weight, speed, everything that you can do, he's gonna be on the field this year for sure. And you know, it's common in college football for true freshmen to start, obviously, but when it comes to Georgia, you have to be like KJ Bolden last year. You have to be a certain level of dude to
You gotta be
start.
special.
Yeah, dang, you're special. You have to be special to start and get meaningful reps as a true freshman at the University of Georgia. So, overall, amazing things.
Yeah, overall, super great spring game. I mean, couldn't have asked much more intel from sources. I'm pretty sure we went through every single player on the depth chart and talked about him, at least every single position group, and just get his takes and just the overall how it's going to look this upcoming year. It just got me times 10, like ultimately so much more excited for the year. By the end of the conversation, I was like, give me Marshall, give me Marshall. Like, what are we doing? You're telling me I have to wait 4 more, 5 more months for this? That's going to be the tough part.
Oh yeah, for sure. And we talk about at the beginning of the show how Tennessee's week two, that, right? It's week two, right?
I think we have a bye in between. I think
Yeah,
it's week
that's
one
what I
bye,
thought,
near
because I was like,
three,
there's no way
week
it's
three.
week two,
But they're the
but
second game.
second game, exactly. And that just matchup where we're pretty much getting a bye week in our first week, just a tune up going into Knoxville with this team, man. I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
Dude, they're not going to know what hit them, dude. And then Bama turning around 2 or 3 weeks later, walking into Athens. I have quite the thoughts and opinions on Bama, but we're going to keep that kind of censored, at least for now.
There are
Dude.
plenty of episodes to go until the week one, so we will save them. We don't want to give everyone everything. We got to have the people wanting more, Jacob. Well, I think that is a good note to end on, Jacob. Emphatic note to end on. Great recording, great time talking, but we hit a lot of topics in this short amount of time. So,
Yes, we did.
yes, sir. Shout out to you. Shout out to anyone that listened. You guys
Shout
know
out
the
to
deal.
sports. It was a great
Yes,
weekend for sports.
shout out to sports as a whole. As always, guys, you know the deal. Like, comment, subscribe, rate, review, do all this stuff. And we will be back sometime this upcoming week.
We'll
Not
be
too
back
sure
later on
when.
this week.
Yeah, no, for sure. But yeah, we'll be back. And as always, it's the Gridiron Pulse, and we appreciate it. We'll see you guys next time.
See ya.